welcome. Thanks for joining me for this week's Admissions Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and ultimately successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can high-five the person next to you and exclaim, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in at the right program for you. I have had several deans and directors from leading U.S. MBA programs on the show over the last several weeks. This week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to hear from director of HEC Paris, the leading European business school. But first, I want to address a question that I'm frequently asked. We had a question this week. In this case, I'm choosing to address it not because I believe it's a good question, but I'm addressing it because I believe it's a bad question, and it's one that I'm asked way too often. The question is, my test score is X. Which range of schools should I apply to? Now, I get this question from applicants to all kinds of programs, but probably the professional schools, because they have the most rankings, are the ones that generate it the most, with MBAs definitely ranking first. They're taking first place in this particular contest. Now, let's say you give a number, and again, instead of my test score is X, it would be my test score is a 680, 650, or 700, particularly for the GMAT. And you can do the same with the LSAT. 160, anyone? Or perhaps the MCAT, anyone take a 29? Any of those numbers, you can fill in the blank and then say, what range should I apply to? Why do I dislike this question? It focuses exclusively on the test and assumes the score is determinative. And while, whether it's the GMAT, the GRE, the MCAT, or the LSAT, they are definitely a critical element in your application, unless you are being completely unrealistic, it is not a sole determinant of where you'll get in. Grades count, life experience counts, challenges overcome count, your competition counts, and the specific strengths and weaknesses of the program in any given range also count. And the question completely ignores what should be driving your graduate education decisions. And those are your goals. That question disregards all those factors that you, the applicant, should be considering when you attempt to evaluate your qualifications and competitiveness. But I'll go further. Within any given rankings range, there will be programs better at some things than at others. So by focusing on some range, you are essentially buying into criteria that may not reflect at all what's important to you. Bottom line, when you choose schools, forget ranges. Make your own rankings. Give your future a vote in the process instead of disenfranchising it. Figure out what's important to you in a school in terms of your personal needs and your goals. Then evaluate for the schools that support your goals, the ones where you are competitive. Yes, do consider your test score, but also include in your evaluation the other qualifications and factors I mentioned. Now that I got off my chest, if you have any admissions-related questions that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/75, and you will see a widget that will allow you to leave an audio message in which you can ask your question. You can speak using your computer mic or your phone. You can also send me questions via email to questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. Oh, and FYI, if you just want to ask your question in a comment on the blog, feel free to do so. It works too. We're developing a wonderful, thoughtful, collaborative, supportive community on Accepted, and you're more than welcome to comment on the blog too. Final point, I'm actually recording this little segment of today's show after I've finished the interview with our guest, and if you listen through to the end, you will find that he puts tremendous importance and emphasis on the importance of fit with a school in terms of the culture, in terms of the mindset, as he put it. And again, that has nothing to do with the score. So with that, we're going to move on to our guest. In June 2013, I had the pleasure of attending a conference for MBA admissions consultants at HEC in Paris. It was a wonderful event, and I wanted to bring a little bit of that conference to you here today. It's taken me too long, but better late than never. And at least this is a time when, listener, you can easily add HEC to the list of programs that you may want to consider. Or actually, as I'm thinking about it, with HEC's two intakes, you can almost always add HEC to the list of programs you want to consider. I'd like to introduce our guest for today, Philippe Oster, Director of Communication, Development, and Admissions at HEC Paris MBA. Philippe has a master's from Strasbourg University and an MBA from the Sorbonne. He has worked and taught in England and Lithuania, in addition to having worked in Paris for the Educational Division of the Paris Chamber of Commerce. He has been with HEC since 2009. Philippe, welcome to Admission Straight Talk. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for welcoming me to the show.
Okay, great. Can you give us an overview of the HEC Paris MBA program? I'm sure are some listeners listening to the show who are not that familiar with it. So just what does a student go through in the course of the one-year program? Or I guess you also have a longer option, but let's discuss that too.
No problem. The program has a length of 16 months, actually, and there is a reason for that. So maybe we can go later into details regarding this.
Sure.
So a few words about HEC Paris as a school. So HEC has Paris has a long history of business education, because HEC was created before the Eiffel Tower even didn't exist at the time when HEC Paris was created. So HEC Paris has a reputation of being the alma mater of CEOs in Europe. HEC Paris is also located southwest of Paris. That means that that we have intellectual and I'd say physical proximity with the highest concentration of multinational corporations in Europe. The program is 16 months, so we think it's the best of both worlds. It's a little bit more condensed than a traditional US MBA, but it's also slightly younger than the average top European MBA.
Okay. So I thought I saw two options in terms of the length of the program.
Because we have, in fact, two intakes.
Okay.
As you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. And it's true to say that when you start in January, you finish your courses in 12 months. I mean, the academic curricula per se is 12 months, and then you can move on to your first employment during the last term, which will be considered by HEC technically and by the faculty as what we call a fieldwork project that is credit bearing. So your first 4 months with your new employer can count as a full term for HEC Paris. Hence the announced duration of 12 months for the people who would start in January.
Got it. Okay. I see. And now, is there a core to the HEC Paris program where people start, like the first semester, they're all basically taking the same classes, and then they specialize, and then can you go over that a little bit? Yeah.
Definitely. So the first two terms, so the first 8 months, are dedicated to basically the core, the fundamentals. So, and this is a mandatory period for all of our students. So you really go all to the we call that the fundamental phase. So you will go to all the core elements of management. So namely financial markets, marketing, stats for decision, corporate finance, organizational behavior during those first 8 months. And then during what we call the customized phase, that is the next 8 months of the program, the second part of the program, people will have a sort of choice of options that will help them customize and tailor their MBA to their professional objectives.
Okay, and do all people have like an experiential project, a capstone project at the end of their program, whether they start in January or in September?
Definitely, people will go through the same academic contents and will have the same options whether they start in September or January.
Got it. Now, how is an application to HEC processed? What kind of evaluation process is it going to undergo?
So my unbiased point of view, of course, is that the HEC Paris admissions process is it has to be efficient to me, right. But it also has to be fast. And one of the new things we did last year, and that we will maintain for the upcoming years, is that we multiply the number of admissions, official admissions juries, by two. So we do have 12 admissions juries per year now.
Uh-huh.
So that means something very interesting, because that means that from the time a candidate submits his or her application until the time they receive an admissions notification from us, it shouldn't take more than 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you
the process is rather fast. Yep.
When you talk about admissions juries, are you saying that there are like 12 different people looking at the application and evaluating it? I'm not familiar with the term.
Okay, an official admissions jury is basically a jury, a group of people that will decide on one's admissions.
Okay.
And we do it the French way. So it's something that is very official. A dozen people that are being present, and among them the president of the HEC admission juries, who is someone, he is an academic authority. I say he because currently it's a he.
Uh-huh. Okay.
An academic authority that who does not belong to the school. Okay. Is a direct representative of the Minister of Higher Education.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And he is the person who will make the final decision. Why so? Because the program is accredited by the Ministry of Higher Education, and also because in France we do have specific rules regarding accredited programs. And one of these rules is the integrity of the admissions process. So, for instance, we wouldn't be able to do quotas.
Right.
So there's no quota on gender, there's no quota on nationalities. We cannot do that. The Ministry of Higher Education is just asking us to take the best, whatever their origins, whatever their gender, and so on and so forth. So that is one specificity that is not that you will not find certainly in other schools.
So if 12 people, these 12 jurists, review the application, is it basically majority? And who breaks the tie?
The president of the jury.
Okay.
So basically, my job or my team's job is to present application to the jury.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then there are discussions on every case. There are discussions. So part of the jury are also our career management center director, the academic mm-hmm. director, the dean, the associate dean, and some representatives of the national authorities for competitive examination. It's something really serious, really official.
So you don't even evaluate the applications, right?
So the applications go through a pre-selection process.
Okay.
And I am, with my team, in charge of this. So first the pre-selection, then we send people to interview or not.
Uh-huh.
We gather all the results from the interviews, and the official admission jury, we call it this way, the admissions committee, let's say, mm-hmm. meets every month.
I see. Okay. And that's why it takes no more than 5 weeks, right? Because basically that they're meeting once a month. Am I
exactly.
right?
Exactly. And if you add another week, you get a decision on the potential scholarship that you would be granted.
Wow. So that's automatically considered financial aid?
No. People have, once they receive a notification of their admissions, they have 4 to 5 days to apply.
Got it. All right. Now, when you're doing in the pre-selection stage and you're evaluating an application to determine if they should get an interview invitation, or I don't know, do you make a recommendation to the committee or not?
We do indeed make a recommendation to the committee.
Okay.
But every application is discussed.
Got it.
So that makes long juries.
I can imagine, right. When you're reviewing an application and deciding either whether to issue an interview invitation or to recommend the applicant to the jury, what gets you excited about an applicant for AGP?
Actually, we go through, we have 17 criteria.
Okay.
That we do evaluate. And subsets of criteria.
Can you mention some of them?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Academic background, education is one
sure,
of those.
Sure.
Of course, professional experience. I can go a little bit more into details. I will not give you all of my secrets.
a few secrets would be appreciated.
okay.
International exposure,
that uh-huh. is key. That right. is key. This is something I take a lot of time in evaluating. Mm-hmm. Activities, extra professional activities, and of course we also listen to what people say about candidates. That means we have a close look at the recommendation letters, and also at what the candidate says about himself or herself in the essays. So, for instance, regarding professional experience, we will look at the duration of this professional experience. You know that in top European programs, we like to have people with some kind of seniority at the MBA level.
Yeah.
So we admit people with a very minimum of 3 years of professional experience.
Mm-hmm.
The average is 6-7 years. So we will have a look at the duration, of course, the progression within the company the applicant is working for. We're looking at if this company is selective in its recruitment. And we'll also look at this very early stages, that's the employability of applicants post HSC MBA. So that's one key thing that we do evaluate. I want to stress something also, because okay. we want to reduce the biases in terms of evaluation, especially during this pre-selection phase, that all the applications are read by one and only one person. So
really?
That's a lot of job for this person, but they're all read by one person. We don't communicate on the name of this person. Mm-hmm. It's kept secret.
Okay.
It's really important because it prevents from any lobbying from some external stakeholders
sure.
regarding one or the other application. So for me, this is very comfortable. I'd say as admissions director, because you know, the pre-assessment, the pre-selection evaluation is made by someone people and candidates do not know. Not even people from the MBA staff, apart from the core admissions team, do not know about this person.
I should ask what gets that person excited about an applicant, but I don't think you want to tell me that one.
No. That's okay.
HEC recently, and I'm sure it's constantly evolving, but changed its curriculum. And as I was preparing for today's call, I noticed that the core includes classes like, I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, Negoism, Business Simulation, and a Bach
yes.
Business Game for learning mm-hmm. the fundamentals of accounting and financial reporting. What are those classes?
So basically, Negosim, just to give you the example of Negosim, is a real-scale negotiation simulation.
Okay.
We do that at the very early stages of the program, namely in the introduction weeks, because it also helps, it is also a nice breaking activity.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, it's a real scale and real time negotiation simulation between different stakeholders in different companies to, for instance, to provide the best option to develop their activities in one market. So we compose the teams. So teams, basically at HEC, we, the academic team, composed team of students, you know, according to their backgrounds and nationalities, to have the greatest mixed as possible. So that is completely integrated at the very early stages of the fundamental phase, yes.
And does this focus on game simulation kind of reflect an approach to business education that's carried through?
I think so. It also links to the way we want our students to acquire leadership. It's very hands-on. So aside the core elements of the fundamental phase, we have what we call a leadership thread, which is composed of different steps that help our students to acquire leadership, but very practically, very pragmatically. So basically, they're put in situations, and in real situations, where they can exercise and test their influence on others. One of the examples that is well known is a leadership seminar that we do at Saint-Cyr. Saint-Cyr basically is the West Point for the French army. Mm-hmm. So we do take all of our students. It's mandatory, unless you have a medical condition, of course. But we take all of our students there, and any of those have to engage in exercises in unusual, let's say, unusual context. So it's not a commando a training or whatever.
Right.
It's basically taking the best out of the French army in terms of decision making and leadership skills. So each of our students will have to lead a team of nine of his teammates through an exercise that is supervised by instructors that are senior officers of the French army. So it could be, for instance, learning how to build a bridge out of wooden sticks. And build a bridge, make all of your team cross the river, and then remove the bridge from the river and progress. So our students are not used to this kind of exercises, apart from those who have a
military background.
And there are some. But usually they are senior officers, so they are themselves instructors. And then, of course, every exercise is debriefed by the instructors and by a member of the faculty who is actually a professor in organizational behavior. So, and we observe how, what kind of leadership they have on others, how influential they are with others, and this way we can help our students progressing in that field. So it's very handsome. Another example is the NBA tournament. So this is a very famous tournament in Europe because it's to put it in short, it's the Olympics of NBAs in Europe.
Yes. Well, I think it's also gotten American schools lately, hasn't it?
Some American schools do pay a visit from time to time. We had HBS coming last year.
Yeah.
We competed against each other in soccer. They won, but HEC won the overall tournament. But that's only we thought they were nice not sending their basketball team, but in fact that's it.
The
soccer team was full of French and Spanish.
I was just gonna say, isn't there a little bit of a shame, isn't there a little embarrassment when a bunch of Americans beat Europeans in soccer?
It is. As a team was full of Europeans,
okay,
and
okay.
Brazilians, and
all right.
It was okay.
Okay.
So, but that's the fun part of things. In fact, we as campus will provide the facilities, but our students have to organize these tournaments from scratch. And it's a real event. It's 1,600 people coming in May on campus, competing in 30 different sports disciplines. So it's something to organize, and they do take care of the whole organization. So A team will dedicate some time to find the sponsorships, you know, like convincing, for instance, Adidas to sponsor the event. The other team will take care of logistics. The other team will take care. And so there is a general management for the event team that will be elected or nominated by the student body. Mm-hmm. And this management team will be supervised by some faculty members. And we will observe what the leadership skills are, how they make it, how they can improve, and we provide feedback to them. So these are two examples on how we...
Right. And I'm sure this tournament is a little business in and of itself. There's costs, there's revenue, there's a lot of logistics. Sounds good. Now let's go turn a little bit in a different direction now. Just sure. when someone tells me that he or she is interested in pursuing a career in international marketing or luxury goods, I immediately think of HEC. Mm-hmm. What does HEC offer the prospective applicant interested in luxury goods marketing or strategy or international marketing and strategy? I mean, how did it develop that reputation?
So we... Just to give you an overview of our placements, and it's pretty consistent over the last 5 years, around 20% of our students go to the finance industry, mm-hmm. 20% to the consulting industry, and then 55% of the others go to all the different sectors of the industry. And some of them, of course, go to the luxury industry. So I wouldn't say that we have a specific approach to this industry, but it's true to say that we have a kind of, let's say, intellectual proximity in that kind of industry.
Yeah.
Why? Because, the L'Oréal headquarters mm-hmm. are based in Clichy, so strictly speaking, that's 15 kilometers, 20 kilometers from here, mm-hmm. And so are the Kering industry. And mind you, the CEOs of these companies are most of the time HEC alumni.
Right. So, I believe we even heard from, was it the former CEO of Cartier?
Certainly, yes. But L'Oréal, for instance, last week we had Jean-Paul Agon, the CEO of L'Oréal, coming to campus and speaking to MBA students. And how he will find his next billion customers over the next decade.
Wow.
So we cultivate this proximity. These people come to campus, are happy to come to campus, to give back to the school. And so it's really good for us. Then during the customized phase, you have the opportunity of doing a specialization in marketing that will be geared towards the luxury strategy. So among our faculty, we have sheer academics like Jean-Noël Capferrer, who are gurus in terms of luxury strategy. But we also have practitioners like Vincent Bastien, who is a former CEO of Louis Vuitton, mm-hmm. and who comes and explain how they developed their brand at an international level. The other thing that is good with this, why it is good to cultivate this proximity, is that during the customized phase, our students can do what we call a field work project. And this is basically it could take two options. First is an internship that is integrated in the program for a term, for 4 months, and that is supervised by the faculty, or a consulting project that is done with your peers in the peer students. So this internship period, this fieldwork period, for me is excellent for the people who are not familiar with the industry, but who want to test this industry sector in an academic environment. So you're doing your internship, your fieldwork, supervised by the faculty. in an industry you're not familiar with because you come from another one. So for me, it's a good way to test your bearings in a new sector of industry. And this is valid for, of course, the luxury sector, but it is also valid for any other sector that you would test. It's also very good for our non-European students to would like to change geographies post-MBA.
Okay. All right. Now, this actually leads to my next question, and that is, I know you have a very, very international student body, but my understanding, you can correct me if I'm wrong, please do, is that jobs in the EU are fairly limited at the moment. The economy is not that robust right now. So if you have people coming from outside the EU who either are unable or prefer to return to their home countries, how do you help them get a job?
We have different case by case. We have different type of situations. I'd say that 50% the new stats for the class 2014 are about to be released. But I'd say that 50% of our actually students stay in Europe. Okay.
Really, that's very high number. Yeah.
Go outside of Europe. But linking to what I just said before, with our proximity with those with the multinational corporation that are based in Paris or in the Paris area, well, basically those multinationals whose headquarters are here are looking for talented and international candidates to positions that will entail, developing the global strategy of the company outside of France and outside of the headquarters. So I'd say, and then you have other companies who have a strong development in Europe, like Amazon, who are great recruiters because they want people trained here. That will be able to help them with the development locally here in Europe.
Right. Like I said, the cultural fluency, right?
Yes.
That is so critical, really, in marketing.
Exactly. Cultural agility also, yeah.
Right. Now, I mentioned that, if people mentioned to me that they are interested in international marketing or luxury goods marketing, that I immediately think of HEC. What else should make me think of HEC? What other areas of business is HEC specifically strong in?
We have a diversified recruitment. I will also say that we have a diversified placement. Mm-hmm. So a truly diversified placement. Pretty strong, I'd say. The top consulting.
You mentioned 40% of the class goes to finance and consulting. So those are two fairly obvious.
Yes, that's fairly obvious.
Yeah.
And then all the subsectors of the industry. So aerospace, energy. And then consumer goods to some extent.
Right. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
I'd say.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Now, what advice do you have for people considering HEC? What should they haven't decided yet to apply. Mm-hmm. What should they be thinking about?
Oh, I have some advice. If I may, before thinking of HEC, I would advise the applicants that would consider an MBA to target the top 25, top 30 worldwide. Because, as you mentioned, the MBA is an investment. The economic situation worldwide is not, so you need guarantees. And targeting a top 30 worldwide is a guarantee of, I'd say, first, academic quality.
Right.
Backed up by good infrastructures. That is important. It's a guarantee of selectivity. among your peers. You will be mixed with peers that have been truly and very well selected.
Mm-hmm.
It is also a guarantee in Europe of diversity, you said it.
Right.
And then it's a third guarantee, it's a guarantee of good career support backed up by powerful alumni networks. That is very key and important. And I think that within this top 25, top 30, there shouldn't be more than two or three MBAs, two or three programs that will match both, and this is important, your professional objectives and your mindset.
Right.
And my third advice is not to listen too much to people like me. It's true, Linda.
Well, I'm
it's
so glad Linda. You said
this. I have a job. I have a job.
I'm glad you said this at the end of the podcast.
Yeah. I have a job. I can say it later. I have a job. My job is to promote the school.
Okay.
Listen, rather listen to the people who quit the job to come to do their MBAs to a GC or to another school. Listen to them. Listen to recent alumni. This is much more important than whatever I could say or my colleagues could say about this course. So applicants have to do their homework.
Absolutely.
When doing their MBA search. They do have to do their homework. They do have to connect with the schools through alternative ways. And now it's quite possible with all those social networks, and you always know the friend of a friend who did a HEC MBA or who knows about HEC Paris all over the world. So it's possible, it's feasible. So applicants do really have to do their homework. Because then...
I hope everybody listens to that bit of advice.
I hope so too.
From you.
No, but then that makes good applications.
Yes.
That makes good applications. That prevents from people who wouldn't match or wouldn't feel HEC Paris is a good option for them. That these people would not apply, you know.
Right.
And because we have no time to waste. And you
have
the candidates. It's really important.
And so you also offer them the opportunity to do like a pre-application or pre-assessment, don't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So this is a very we ask for very basic information that shouldn't take more than 10 minutes to fill that in. So mm-hmm. professional progression, academic background, GMAT if they have one.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as we have no time to waste and neither the candidate, basically what we do is just to say, okay, we encourage you to apply, or maybe not now, maybe a little bit later, or please don't, because you're not the right profile. You're not meeting the basic prerequisites for HEC Paris MBA, so you should consider other options. Yes,
okay.
We do that. And this is very this is a very useful very useful tool, I guess, for the applicants and for us.
Oh, absolutely. Now that leads to my last question, and that is, what advice do you have for those who have decided to apply? They're about to prepare their applications. What do you wish they would know?
Meaning that. That so basically you asked me for some tips while writing the application.
Tips for writing the application, or maybe even things they should think about before they begin writing the application. I mean, I think you made an excellent point, and I really, really do hope that everybody listens closely to what you just said about doing their homework. Maybe you can. You know, hit a home run, as we say here in the United States, by giving equally good advice for this to the person who's decided they want to apply to HEC. What should they be thinking about?
So after having done their homework, they should especially on the mindset aspects of things, okay? Because schools have different cultures. And we look in Europe, because among the top tier, we are very different. So mm-hmm. that's we're lucky there. And for in order to work on this mindset, there's no other way than multiplying the contact with the school. Coming to the school before applying is, I think, is a very good advice that we can give to applicants. Then when writing the application, I'm specifically looking at different things, and I call that the five C's.
Okay.
Content.
Mm-hmm.
We want real interesting things about candidates, you know. Then correctness. Correctness for me is very, maybe it's my French education, but correctness for me, it means proper grammar, proper spelling, proper punctuation. Please proofread, show that candidates must show that they take the admissions seriously, the HEC admissions seriously. And, you know, writing well is also a proof that they have taken the time to do whatever their nationality, whatever their language of birth. Correctness is important. Clarity. So that's the third C. To avoid any ambiguity in what the candidates write. That is, for me, very important. Conciseness, too. To have an economical use of words. To be able to express one's ideas in the most forthright way, say. And finally, coherence. We understand that it's important to as a candidate, as an applicant, to brand oneself, to sell yourself on your applications. We know that perfectly well. But people have to remain true to themselves and to their achievements. So, they shouldn't overstate their achievements. That is important.
Mm-hmm.
Never overstate your achievements because we double check and because we know perfectly well that the perfect candidate does not exist and
right.
that if he ever existed, he certainly wouldn't need an MBA.
Well, all I can tell you is I think when you said a couple of minutes ago that people shouldn't listen to you or people like you, you were making a mistake, okay? I think these five C's are fantastic. I might steal them from you.
Please do.
The essays, oh, thank you.
There's no copyrights.
Yeah, and I'm constantly telling applicants to do their homework about the programs and specifically to talk to current students and alumni. So at least on this end of the call, I think you've given outstanding advice. I want to thank you so much, Philippe, for joining me today. Evening for you, morning for me, or now noontime. But I think it's time to end the call.
Thank you very much.
Well,
and thank you for having put with my French accent.
It was a pleasure. I'm sure you're getting tired at this point. Why don't you send me tomorrow the URL, perhaps, for the HEC MBA website and maybe also your Twitter feed or any other places that you feel would be important for a potential applicant or an applicant to know about.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
I'll do that, no problem. I'm not tired. I'm starving. This is it.
Oh, I'm sorry. You haven't had dinner yet, basically. Okay. Well, we're going to finish off real fast. We'll include links in the show notes. Thank you so much, Philippe, for joining us. We'll include links in the show notes at info.exceba.com/75 to the websites that Philippe is going to send me after he eats dinner, as well as to any related articles and show notes that we have at Exceba. Listener, thank you, too, for joining Philippe Auster and me for our 75th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please share the good news by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the word about Admissions Straight Talk, especially if you leave five-star feedback. So, if you think AST deserves those five sparkling stars, please let iTunes know. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave a review. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.exceba.com/75 or by sending an email to questions@exceba.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admissions Straight Talk, produced by Exceba, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.